to Horsefly Chronicles Radio with Julia and Philip Siracusa, sponsored by Carnation, airing live on the United Public Radio Network on 105.3 FM in New Orleans. This show's entrance has been edited, produced, and directed by Gwen Clapper from Perfect Trust Productions, LLC. You can find us at perfecttrustproductions.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Monday night segment of Horsefly Chronicles Radio with myself, Julia Siracusa, and Phil Siracusa. We're broadcasting live from the International Public Radio and the United Paranormal Radio Network on 105.3 FM from New Orleans. This evening's show is fully sponsored by Carnation, so we want to thank them for their sponsorship. We love them. You will have to do a few things in order to participate. Go over to the YouTube channel, UFO Paranormal Radio, or International Public Radio. You can also go over to the Facebook stations, UFO Paranormal Radio Network, UFO Undercover with Joe Montaldo, News on the Flip Side, Twitch, SoundCloud, Palm Beam. Also go over to our group, Horsefly Chronicles Radio. Join if you haven't, and if you have any questions for our guests, please ask. Can you guys hear me?
We can now.
Yes.
Okay. We can't see.
Somehow we lost the picture of you.
Oh, no. Okay, guys. Well, please welcome to the show Kat and Dan Eckhart. The Eckharts are seance hosts, mediums, and celebrity occultists obsessed with exploring what lies beyond the veil. Through their love of the paranormal, they share their work by showing the spirit communication can be exciting, mystical, and useful to us all. So please let's welcome Kat and Dan to the show.
Welcome.
Yay.
Thanks so much for having us. Hello.
Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Nice to meet both of you. I listened to a couple of your shows. I find yous both unique and different, so I like that.
Well, thank you.
That's
good.
And it's very interesting.
And, you know, you guys have, I have to say this, you guys have, like, you have great style. Do you use that in your work, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that there's a certain expectation sometimes people have whenever they hear the term occultist or seance host or witch or what have you. And there's value in fighting against those expectations. There's value in certainly trying to redefine that work. But then there's also a sense of comfort and ease. And since we view everything we do as a ritual, we kind of view our attire, our aesthetic as ritual garb, as ritual guise that helps everyone kind of get into the right mind space for what we're going to do together.
Wow, I love it.
So if you could tell us and the listener out there, whoever wants to go first, how you got started. So take us back a little bit.
Yeah. Well, should I start, Kat?
I think so. Okay. It's a wonderful and winding story.
It is. Like all of these things, it seems in some ways that we just happened into it and in others that it was kind of predestined. I grew up in a haunted house. I have no real frame of reference for what that was. My family was very religious and hauntings weren't necessarily something that fell within like a religious worldview that my family shared. And so I was having these experiences with things at the edge of the bed at night, dark, shadowy creatures moving around the room, waking up in the middle of the night to light flooding in through the window and being absolutely terrified of these things. And I was presented with essentially two options. The first was a kind of religious explanation that this was some kind of demonic influence, which is, of course, terrifying. And the second was what I had around me, which at the time was History Channel like programming, like everything is aliens, which is also kind of terrifying. So my two options of being in this kind of experience was either like there are aliens coming in the room at night, this is demons, or the one no one wants to consider, I'm crazy. This is just my brain misfiring and I'm going to be institutionalized. It was something that I really struggled with throughout high school into my early college years. And despite loving like science fiction, loving the concepts around like scary movies, I was never, it felt wholly other. It didn't feel like it was fueled by too many midnight movies. It felt like a terrifying encounter with the other thing, the other side, whatever that might be. And it wasn't until I met Kat in college that it kind of began to take more shape and be more explainable.
Sure. I think it wasn't even until after I had that experience that you opened up to me. Mm-hmm. Because I've talked about this a few times about going into his bedroom, his childhood bedroom, and turning around and seeing, experiencing something there, some sort of shadow creature, shadow entity rather. And it was only after that that I explained what happened to me that Dan sort of opened up.
Yeah, because you don't tell like the girl that you're dating, oh, by the way, I live in a haunted house.
Maybe you do.
Maybe you do. But at that point in time, I wasn't.
We were 18.
Yeah. So as you can imagine, it was profoundly reassuring to suddenly have another person have this experience in your space, yeah, to kind of reify that, oh, this is not like a mental episode. This is something that's actually observable. Someone else has seen this.
You know, that's interesting because a lot of people we talk to, it starts at a young age.
Yeah.
And I have to ask a question to both of you. What is it? So what was the black shadow? What is it?
Yeah. So what's interesting about that is looking back, I don't think that that black shadow actually had a real identifiable name. I don't think it was a spirit. I don't think it had a consciousness. What I think it was, and I'm a big fan of some of the work which Graham Hancock has done in terms of conversations around the way our the way our words inform our reality, and how some cultural groups have language to explain these kinds of like experiences. Now, I would never say that we're shamans or anything like that. I think that's its own cultural identity. Mm-hmm. However, that experience of encountering the other is something that in the United States and Britain, we don't really have a good kind of cultural language for. And so I think that shadowy entity was literally my subconscious reaction against these paranormal experiences, against having this visitation from the other, the fear, the anxiety, maybe some of the kind of religious trauma informed a sort of tulpa, a sort of thought form that simply was all of anxieties.
Right. But I got to interject for a second, because how would Kat see it if it was your thoughts?
Yeah.
It was projected into a reality that we were able to share. So it sounds a little absurd, but I guess that's how tulpas can work, how shadow people can work.
Yeah, it's sort of
wait. You just said I was going to go there. You said shadow people. Now we're on to something a little different. I was going to bring that up, and that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. So, you're both under the understanding that if you talk about it, it can manifest because it works through the subconscious, which I believe, and things can be created. And then Kat picks it up from you. And she sees it. So, Kat, did it ever go to your residence when you lived home with your parents?
No, never, not once. I always looked for spirit activity and paranormal activity in my space growing up, and there's just nothing.
Yeah.
It was only in that house?
It was always located around that, to the point where, no one in my family lives there anymore, but to the point where returning home, spending Christmases, we live a distance away from my family, spending New Year's, there was a sense of unease in that space, a sense of, oh, there's, you know, something still kicking about, something still knocking about. It never seemed to follow me to college. It never followed us to our first apartment or our first home. So it did seem to be localized into that environment.
Yeah, and I would say it wasn't just one thing.
Right.
Because other things did manifest in college.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Like?
Yeah, so one of the weirdest things that kind of makes up our story was that, well, for Kat and I, like, going to college, and we went to a Christian college, the thing that really stuck out to me in that period was I wasn't a big believer in the idea of past lives. I wasn't really sure what that was. It seemed like everybody had to, in my mind, everybody had a similar experience of being royalty or something in the past. I now know that's not true, but growing up, that was kind of what I presupposed. And when I met Kat on the first day of college, it felt like we had known each other forever. Like that we had known everything about each other, that we had all these weird kind of like synchronistic, just not even very important things, just things that was like, oh my God, you know about this too? This is such a weird little tiny piece of minutia. And Kat herself represents kind of one of the first workings that was done in my kind of foray into like this idea of the occult, of esoterica, of ritual praxis. Because when you're a teenager, I think anybody, any teenager is very interested in finding someone, right? Finding the perfect person, mm-hmm. finding that girlfriend, boyfriend, what have you. And I very, very vividly remember being like a junior in high school and saying like, okay, well, let's put this, let's see what happens, and kind of coming up with this idealized person. And sure enough, the first day of college, well, sitting across from me, here's this idealized person, and this person is real. And this person has all of these connections to my life and experience. So to us, that felt like an act of manifestation, an act of maybe there is some kind of past life connection.
Okay.
I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
How do you know it wasn't a loved one that it was the shadow person, like a grandparent or someone yeah. who passed over?
Well, that's a great question, because I think a lot of times we hope that the visitations that come to us are in some ways connected to our deceased loved ones or our deceased friends or family. And while my family does not believe really in mediumship and does not really kind of accept that worldview, the background that I come from is an Appalachian folk magic one. My grandparents are from Appalachia, and there are certain things that feel very, very folk craft about their practices. For example, my grandmother goes to graves every single year. She visits all the family graves, cleans all the family graves, takes care of it, marks down notes, and like keeps a big book, a family Bible, just like you'll find in Appalachian folk craft. And within my parents' house and my grandmother's house, there's a space where they keep all the photos of deceased family members. Loved ones who have gone on, which to someone outside of, you know, a Christian perspective would say, well, that's an ancestor altar, right? We have all these flowers and all these photos of these people. Well, I vividly remember growing up and my mom had this very bizarre dream about a departed loved one, someone who passed right before I was born. And she said, I remember her talking about around the Christmas, around the breakfast table. And she said, I had the weirdest dream last night. It was, you know, my great grandmother. She came to our house. She was sitting in the rocking chair just over there. It was very clear. She said, it wasn't like a normal dream. And my departed grandmother said, well, great grandmother said, so this is your house, because she had never been to the new house. And my mom said, yeah, this is our house. She said, well, and how are the kids? And my mom said, okay, that's good. And then my departed great grandmother said, okay, all right, well, you have a very nice house here. And then my mom woke up and my mom was like, it just felt so different. It was a different kind of experience. And I think that was the through line for me with that shadow entity, that kind of what I believe to be some sort of projection that gained a foothold in the observable world. It didn't have that distinct feeling associated with it. It didn't have that kind of sense of identity, that sense of comfort. Now, sometimes ancestral spirits, loved ones, there can be trauma there. There can be grief there. There can be negative feelings.
Sure.
But we often have an intuitive nudge as to who that person was or what that thing is. And this unique shadow creature entity felt extremely alien. It felt extremely other. It didn't feel, and that's the only way I can describe it, it didn't feel.
It was unnatural and it didn't have an identification.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it was a dark shadow. It's interesting. A lot of these cases, there's that dark shadow, yeah. Which, look, mm-hmm. we live in a haunted house.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about, hands on in my basement. Yeah. I know. And it's ironic because I always say that these things are intelligent, mm-hmm. way beyond what we even think. Yeah. They're so far advanced. We learned that through having teams here, you know, what these things are capable of. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, you know? And I always raise the question, is it interdimensional beings? Mm-hmm. I don't think it's alienated because they have crafts. I don't think they're going to come down to my house as a shadow. I think they're
right.
I don't see that happening, but I do think that they observe us. Mm-hmm. And certain things act as a trigger for them. Now, in my home, if there's a team and they're investigating, and they say certain things within an hour in the basement mm-hmm. through the wall, there they come.
Yeah.
And then you may or may not see it visually, but you'll see the corner of the eye, like that flashing shadow. But mm-hmm. on the equipment, you see the shadow going by so quick, and they mm-hmm. capture it, slow it down. And then comes the words through the recordings of these things. They do talk.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Some of them are very nasty and intelligent.
Yeah.
Like they want you to know, like, hey, I'm watching you. Mm-hmm. And then as we always ask, well, what's the purpose? What are you going to get from me, right? What can I possibly give you? But it's our energy.
Yeah.
That's what it yeah. comes down to. What we've learned is our energy. That's what we're giving them.
Yeah.
Energy. Oh,
exactly.
Our thoughts as well.
Exactly. I'm a big fan of this kind of chaos magic perspective. And for those who are tuning in who may not know what chaos magic is, it's a magical praxis by which people think everything is subconscious or subconsciously created. And our beliefs have power, not just in a belief of creating something, but a belief of like a creating consensus reality. And so these things, whatever they may be, become stronger the more people are thinking about them and paying attention to them. If everybody is looking around for, you know, the UFO that's going to land outside, that might be a clearer manifestation or a stranger manifestation than one person walking down the street and, you know, maybe yeah. just letting the thought pass through their mind. So I do think that these things, especially if they've kind of latched into the material world, do want people paying attention to them, do want people saying, oh, there's knocks outside my wall, there's, you know, electrical weirdness, there's hands on my shoulder. And so I need to keep like paying attention to what that is.
That's fascinating, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you guys ever contact a spirit, maybe during a reading for someone, and the spirit does not want to talk or give consent to talk?
Yes, that has happened a few times.
Yeah, I'm laughing because there's one predominant yes. one that comes to mind.
So over the course of the past 2 years, we have moved some of our readings online. And so as we were sort of getting used to the online space and the Zoom meetings, I was making a connection with a departed mother. And I could feel her reluctance to speak with me, but I kind of pushed a little bit. And looking back, I probably should have just dropped it, but I was kind of like, okay, why don't you want to talk to me? What's going on? Because she was there and her daughter was there on the other side of that screen. I really wanted to make that connection for her. Well, second later, and we were kicked out of our Zoom meeting.
Yeah.
We thought that the whole thing had crashed. And so we scrambled to get back in. And we thought that everyone else would also have been kicked out, but they weren't. So we got back into the meeting and everyone was laughing. It turns out that the person I had made contact with actually hated mediums.
Yes. She would walk down like Ocean City and be like seeing mediums or psychics on the boardwalk and say like, look at those people. Isn't that disgusting? And so her daughter was like, it was absolutely her because yes, she would not want to talk to you.
That's crazy. But I'm sure she believes it now.
Yeah. I think that there are times where we have spirits that don't really want to give consent. And most of the time when that happens, there's some kind of work that spirit is going through. It's not necessarily a negative thing, but we often find it most strongly where there was trauma, where there was, a strained relationship, mm-hmm. where both the spirit and the person who has lost them are both still struggling to qualify that relationship and don't really know how much of a spirit relationship they want to have. I think that can often result in spirits kind of being like, I don't know if now's the time.
We've had the reverse as well.
And we've had the reverse.
Where a spirit really wants to come through and the person who they want to talk to has just heard too much and just wants a break.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
Let's talk about seances.
Mm-hmm.
Teach us. Tell us what you know.
So it bears saying that we're not spiritualists. We have a lot of respect for the spiritualist tradition. Certainly spiritualism was really although spirit contact has been happening since, man first crawled out of the cave, there is a lot of the way that we view spirit contact today, the way that we kind of understand mediumship in the United States is very heavily informed by spiritualism and spiritism. That was a very, very, very popular both religious like expression in the 1850s to the 1900s. And I think sometimes it's forgotten that it was also an extremely popular cultural movement. Like seances were pop culture. They were what the Marvel movies are today. They were in the late 1800s to the point where Abraham Lincoln's holding a seance in the White House. People were going to them as much for entertainment as they were for legitimate connection with the other side. There was a real excitement around this. Thomas Edison famously was trying to patent a communicative like telephone to just call up the spirit world. So there was a real belief, a real desire to make that connection. And of course, after the 1900s, that begins to wane. And spiritualism begins to kind of recede across the United States. And there are multiple factors for that. The atomic age certainly shifted everyone's imagination. It shifted the point of focus, as well as some of the exposés around fraud within seances and within spiritualism specifically. There was a lot of factors for that. But our approach to seances is simply as a form of ritual. Because that's how we were exposed to them. They were ritual acts. It was a way to get together with intention and to hold space for liminal things to happen. Mm-hmm. When we first started attending seances and doing them, we did not consider ourselves to be mediums.
Right. It was only after doing them that we really started to believe.
Yeah.
And believe in the possibility that everyone can access and communicate with the spirit world. But so we have a number of tips for how to hold a great seance. And they range from the mundane, like have tissues at hand and make sure everyone is communicating how they're feeling throughout the event, to more technical ones. Like if you don't like to use the Ouija board, you could use a totally different version of a spirit board. And it's really easy to make your own at home.
Exactly. Our focus has really shifted from being in a space of, there's kind of a crest to this. It was being in a space of experiencing seances and that liminal space where things can happen, to wanting to work within like this kind of mediumistic world and to share messages and to impart these things. And now kind of a shift back towards wanting to make sure that people can facilitate them themselves, and wanting to allow people to go often feel empowered to go and do a seance with their friends. I know that there are ways you can do that without having like The Exorcist 2 happen at your house.
Right. Yeah.
So if someone lost someone in the family, you would help assist them through a seance?
Yeah. So I think it depends.
Sometimes if it's been really soon, our recommendation would be to not, mm-hmm. to wait a little while. For both the living and the dead.
Yeah.
But that we've certainly facilitated seances for people who were looking for contact with a family member and that they were very emotionally invested in that. Mm-hmm. We just think it's better if you have a little bit of time and space for both parties.
We also feel strongly that while receiving a message from a departed loved one is important and is good and can really help someone, that's something that can be achieved very simply by the person. Mm-hmm. In fact, oftentimes at the beginning of our events or our lectures, we'll ask someone, who here has ever had a spirit visitation? And very few people will say, ooh, me. It's not until you get them talking that then they say, oh, and then when my father died, you know, his favorite book fell off the shelf 2 days later, and it was open to a passage that he used to read me all the time as a kid, and the words just hit different. Mm-hmm. Or 2 days after my mother passed, I had this dream, and it wasn't like any normal dream. Like, we were at, you know, my house, and she was talking to me about how everything was going to be fine. And they begin to make those connections that, oh, that was a spirit visitation. That was a message. And we find those are more practical and useful when they come from that person.
Yeah.
Mediums, or specifically seance hosts, are, I think, most effective when people are going into a space to simply create a space where spirit contact can occur.
Yes.
Because we're not bringing that emotionally laden investment with what comes through. And so therefore we're more open to things just happening.
So what does the spirit say in the seance? I mean, have you ever gotten intelligent information where they tell you, look, this is where I am, mm-hmm. In this dimension or this plane of existence? Like, do you get that information, or are you getting things out of the common knowledge of us and what we think we're going to hear and we perceive to be a true message, but it's not?
Yeah. That's these are very insightful questions.
Yes. That's a very difficult question. It reminds me of when we have researched mediumship research.
Yeah, researched mediumship research.
Where the question ultimately is at the end, like, how do we distinguish what is the mechanism by which mediums know this information? Is it somehow passed between living human people? Mm-hmm. Or is it a discarnate entity that's giving you this information? Or are we accessing some sort of Akashic record or some other type of information web? That is the question that is so interesting to us, I think.
Yes. And when spirits come through, regrettably, that all seems to differ. Yeah. Because they seem to have their own messages of where they are, yes, and what they're doing.
Really nasty. Do you ever get a spirit that's very nasty?
Fortunately, we haven't had too many.
We've had like one or two. Mm-hmm. And they have really, they haven't like said nasty things, but they've actually caused some like physical discomfort,
spatial disruption.
And that's a no. We immediately say, if you are here and you're going to bring in this, all this negative stuff, and you're not even communicating properly, you're gone.
Exactly.
It's interesting, and I find this bowl very, very unique in a way, because I always test the waters. Mm-hmm. With I want to believe, I will debunk everybody. I don't care who you are, what you make, if you're on television a million years, I don't care. So I had to prove it for myself. And I remember back in the 80s, I lost someone that I cared about, a friend, and we tried the Ouija board, you know? And my first thought as a teenager, it's fake. It's, you know, you're moving it, all that stuff and that nonsense. But what you just said, Kat, rang true. I was debunking it. I was criticizing what we were talking to, if anything, right? Because we were getting misspelled words and all that. Mm-hmm. And then I remember, as I kept criticizing and provoking, the blanket was going, there was a few of us in the room, was going counterclockwise with us touching it. Yeah. But very, very fast. Mm-hmm. And as that was happening, we were getting sick. Like, we were getting pains in our stomach, and we were getting like off-centered, and we took our hands off. We stopped playing it, and we thought it was just us, like psychosomatic, thinking that we're sick. And then we do it again, and things started to get really, really bad, where we had so much discomfort that we actually had to stop and put it to an end. So, you know, with the Ouija board and seances, from my knowledge and experience, yes, it is real, and I had to prove it to myself. Mm-hmm. sometimes you don't know who you're speaking to, and and sometimes you get answers that don't make sense on a Ouija board, and then sometimes you get answers that will blow your mind with, like, wow, how did you know this? And this is coming from the other side. And that's been proven to me, right? I'm a stubborn New Yorker. I don't believe in anything. Now I do, of course, but
I love it. Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's been proven to me, because I don't believe anybody about anything. That's just how I am, right? But when I had that hands-on experience, and I'm like, well, there's no rational explanation how this spirit knows what's going on in my house in a different room with my sister's blindfolded who's touching the blanket. It's impossible. And when the impossibilities become possible, then you have to question and say, well, then there's realism to the other side. And spirits have told me where they're buried when there was no stone. They could afford a stone. The wind guided us in the cemetery of where they were and how the wind would push against us. And through the mind, they would say, walk against the wind. Keep walking. And then they would psychosomatically tell us to turn to the right. And there's the grave, but no stone.
No, absolutely. It's that stuff always, to me, is some of the most persuasive, but also just awe-inspiring encounters with spirits and with this kind of other side, whatever this actually is, when we break it down, because it does reframe the human experience. It reframes how we live our lives.
It's real. And I tell people today, you don't provoke, don't criticize. Don't try to talk like you're talking to a friend. Treat them with love, respect, trust. One, you don't know who you're talking to sometimes. And other times you may be talking to somebody who's just genuine, who's crossed over, which I have encountered, that wants to talk. And they explain sometimes what it's like. I've gotten some of those answers, by the way. When I've asked a person who I knew and grew up with, what's it like on that side? One of the responses I got was, they said, Phil, look, it's no different. It's just that you can't see us. We can see you. We can touch you. We can hear you. We watch over those that we love. I didn't want to go to a light. I'm earthbound. I'm a spirit. You just can't see me, but I promise you that this is real. This existence is real. But one of the things that did stick out is they talk about the stars. And somehow the alignment of stars creates an energy for the spiritual world to get stronger within our universe and how we make connection with them. Now, I don't know much about that because I don't study stars or anything like that. But when they did say that, I found that to be interesting. And it goes back to, I guess, people talk about full moons and the communication of how we can make better contact with the other side. And I find that amazing. And it goes back to the pyramids, if you really want to think about it, to the Egyptians and communicating and the alignment of stars and pyramids and all that stuff. So it's things I don't know, right?
It's something that is.
It all makes sense how energy is created through things that we don't really understand as much as we should, but they do exist and they are us and we do go on. That's one of the biggest questions I had was, do we go on? And as plain as day, yes, we go on. In the spirit sense, they said that we never had a beginning. And it's a mind blower because you're like, well, that doesn't really align with religion. But what they're saying is we never had a beginning and there is no end. It's like an existence that we always were. You know, I always questioned, you know, I went to Catholic school and all that, and I always questioned, well, where did God come from? And one of the most fascinating YouTube videos I've watched was these people that said, well, God does not exist because he does exist. And I had to understand that. I'm like, well, what does that mean? It means that what I said a few minutes ago, nothing becomes something because it always was. So we perceive things in a box of four corners. Like we try to understand everything, but what the spirit is trying to tell me is that no, you're narrow-minded because it goes above what you really can comprehend, and you can't comprehend this. what I'm trying to say. I'll give it to you in the most simple terms, but it's a million times more than what you can think of.
Right.
And that I can readily believe, because I can barely comprehend time, like how I experience time. We know that it's non-linear. It shows that it changes based on other elements.
Yeah.
But it's something that's hard for even me to wrap my mind around. Like, as we were talking about before, Dan, knowing him in past life, like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Still, I don't.
How do you understand or know that? Yeah. And that's the thing that I see as like a kind of through line through a lot of different like occult philosophies or religious traditions, especially on the mysticism angle. The mysticism end of a lot of like religious groups, if you look into mystics, very much seem to correlate the same things you're speaking about, that we don't end and we don't begin. We're just kind of always there. Time is not at all what we think it is. There is some kind of cyclical element to it, as well as the Ouroboros, the occult symbol of the snake eating its own tail. That is that kind of endless recycling and growing and reforming that's occurring. When you speak of the stars, we see that sometimes, like I resonate with that in both our seance work, where spirits might have things to say about the stars, but also looking at,
stars.
Yes.
Which I draw two days ago.
Exactly. As well as some of these like early occult figures or popular occult figures like Crowley or Jack Parsons, who were absolutely oriented towards communications from spirits. That Crowley, the spirit he drew that was communicating with him, Iwas, looks a lot like what we would call a gray alien. And Parsons, excuse me, was speaking constantly about the need for humanity to leave the planet, to go somewhere else, to the point that, you know, his work was the creation of ultimately what created the NASA rocket engines. So there's this wonderful binding of this reach for humanity in the cosmos somewhere else, not just here.
I definitely agree with that. I think it's amazing. Talk about some of the unique things that you do. Now, you have seances and you can make contact and
paranormal investigations.
Yeah, let's talk about that and you know, what you got out of it.
We love doing paranormal investigations.
Yes.
Not because we really get to connect with people and help them out, just like sitting down and listening to someone talk about something that they're kind of afraid to talk about in general is a good thing, but it's also really kind of, it's a detective story. Mm-hmm. It's putting pieces together and trying to understand what's going on and how can we ameliorate it, because it could be anything.
Yes, really. There are so many different rabbit holes to explore. When we work with paranormal investigative teams, we're very much in like a kind of consultant role. They will bring us in essentially to both act as mediums to tell them where we feel the most energy coming from or what spirits might be there. But they're very focused on the technological side. They want to like see the readings on the computer. They want to have the shadows form on the infrared cameras, etc., which we're all here for. But our work in that capacity is much more of a both a kind of historical conversation about the space, as well as then that kind of, well, I feel like there's energy here and you might want to scope out this floor of the building.
And occult.
Exactly.
Techniques,
and occult technique. But when we're working with our... I'm sorry?
Let's go ahead.
Okay. When we're working with people who like reach out to us or who know of us within the community and they have their own like private haunting scenario happening, those are the cases where we really get to like sit down, interview, investigate, provide constructive like feedback for how to resolve the issue, and then see how the issue resolves. That to me is the most rewarding portion. Because ghost hunting, in my experience, paranormal investigators seem to be very interested in gathering the evidence, but maybe not always interested in helping a spirit cross over or working within what the person who has the space needs. When we get to speak with someone who's having that experience in a one-on-one, it's much more about, okay, so we have this spirit contact. What do you need out of this? What do you need it to stay? Do you need it to go away? Like, where are you at as the person?
Yeah.
I love that work.
That helps people.
Have any of you been like really scared on investigation? Like something that a location that maybe like really scared you, or have you had any attachments?
I don't think we've had any attachments. Something does come to mind when you say, have you been scared? And it was before I sort of delved into all this, before I really started learning about paranormal things and the occult and mediumship. And it was when we went to a prison
In Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania.
You're going to say the name.
Yes.
And that really made me extremely uncomfortable. To the point that it was like something else is going on here. It's not just, you know, whatever, claustrophobic or whatever.
Yeah.
Something is, there's some sort of problematic.
The
prisons are very, very, very scary. And did you say PA? Was it in PA?
Jim Thorpe.
Yes. It was Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania.
That's like an hour from us.
We're in Eastern PA.
Oh, okay. So you know exactly where that is.
And yes, those prisons, they're scary.
Well, there's a lot that's happened there. That's a, you know, there are multiple pieces of that puzzle. One, of course, for your listeners who don't know about that prison, that was the site of, I believe, the Molly Maguires, which was like a mining union that was getting busted by their mining company. There was an armed standoff. Some people went to jail there. And when you were in the prison, from our experience, it felt very much as though, A, there were spirits that were still attached to that space, energies that were attached to that space, that obviously didn't want to be there, that were obviously kind of reliving that kind of, you know, negative experience. Some of them justly for the things that they had done wrong and inflicted, and some unjustly. And then there was the element of spirits, that space being turned into a, it's a museum, but it brings tours through and lots of people walk through it. And it's kind of a, I wouldn't say it's I wouldn't say it's the most respectful form of prison museum I've ever seen. So it feels like maybe some of the spirit there feel like they're kind of being infringed upon, or they're being jostled to the side.
Yeah.
There's a lot to kind of unpack. And for us to walk through that, and for Kat, you specifically, to not really have any kind of background in this work, the feeling was deeply like oppressive and just like, oh gosh, like I'm similar to what you were saying, Philip. I feel unwell. I feel sick. I feel lightheaded. I feel super claustrophobic. Like what's going on here? That was uncomfortable.
Yeah, and women have to be careful while they're investigating prisons. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, and I did, at the time I was Catholic, so I basically did Ave Maria the whole time.
Yeah.
I did whatever I could on hand to protect myself, but now that I know better, like, I would never put myself in that situation again.
Yeah. There's...
No, putting yourself in that situation. It's funny she said Ave Maria.
Yeah, that's...
Mm-hmm. I gotta say something quick. That's interesting. I was Catholic.
Mm-hmm. Well, you still are.
Yeah, I am, but my beliefs, because of the paranormal and things I've experienced, have changed.
Yeah.
More towards I'm open and more receptive to more beliefs because of what I've experienced, not because of what someone told me or what I read in a book that 2 billion people follow. No, I go by hands-on, and that's how I live my life, by universal law. But the funny thing is, you said Ave Maria, and years ago, my house, when I was up alone, and
years ago, like,
yeah, I played that song Ave Maria, which is a beautiful song, by the way. And
it was at our wedding.
My chandelier in the foyer started swaying back and forth.
I didn't see that.
By itself. Yeah. Now it's huge. You gotta push it. Mm-hmm. It's big, you know. And look, I was a big baby. I must have been about 49 years old. And I ran upstairs and went under the covers like a big baby. I mean, I'm saying to myself, if that song is making my chandelier sway, then something obviously either doesn't like it or likes it. And I don't know which one it is, and I don't want to find out because I'm alone. So I'm going to bed, and I'm putting my head under the covers till I see sunlight.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
There's something about...
And I still won't play it late at night because
that was before, like, we really knew, like, the house has.
But
issues.
You know, it's certain things, like certain songs and music and things and we like, say are trigger points. They're trigger points towards the other side, you know?
Yeah.
And then sometimes you can use those trigger points to gain knowledge from the other side as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I could have been a friendly spirit saying, hey, I like this song. I want to talk to you somehow.
Yeah.
Through automatic writing, or I'm going to put these thoughts through your mind of who I am. And you know, I want to ask both of you, because this happens to me. Have you ever been on an investigation or done a seance, and then that night or the night after, some people are coming in your dream that you don't even know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Dreams are one of the easiest entry points, it seems, for most people to experience spirit communication, spirit contact. And for us specifically, when we're doing investigations, and especially investigations in highly energetic spaces, the dreams thing for me is wild, especially with like people who are just kind of showing up. And they can be often sometimes a little bit needy, sometimes like, hey, almost it feels like I saw you here and I'm just like coming by to say, I also need connection, help, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And that's gotten to a point where, you know, we're much more careful about that and what we're letting into our spaces. Mm-hmm. Because I think those components can really, they can frighten people and send them down a rabbit hole that is maybe not productive.
Okay. That's true. I like the way you said that dreams are the entrance point, simple as it, right? It's the truth. Because just people in my dreams sometimes, after an investigation, that I don't even know who they are. And it's not like they're mean or anything. I just, they're there.
And they know you.
And they know me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It is. No, the Marian thing that you brought up is interesting to me, because when we look at like occult philosophy and the ideas of where kind of our gods come from, I've always found something very interesting about Mary as both like a Catholic Church version of Mary, and then also as like a kind of an overlay or a shorthand for some kind of divine feminine, whether that be Ekate or St. Catherine or Mary. There's something one of my favorite occultists, Gordon White, says, where he says some of these things are older or feel older than us, and they feel like they've come with the house. We don't really know their full story. We just know they were here when we got here. And I feel that a lot about things that revolve around Marian theology and eschatology.
Fascinating.
Wow.
Fascinating. Wow. I mean, I know all day about this stuff. I mean, this stuff is really mind-blowing, and yet it's true. And for the listener out there, and I noticed quite a few that listen to the show, more than five, right?
Yes, Bill.
This is real. Look, you're hearing it from two people that are very respected and well-known. Julie and I own the Horsefly Chronicles home, and I didn't believe in anything up until I had experienced it myself.
Yeah.
It's real, you know. It's and I think that we can utilize it towards our tools and knowledge and get help from the other side, whether it's we're having obstacles in our life we can't see. That's happened to me, too, where yes, for guidance from the other side. Mm-hmm. Hey, help me out here. I'm stuck.
Yeah.
Whether it's financially, job, relationship, I need some help. And believe it or not, they help. Mm-hmm. And if they don't help, then there's a reason why they don't. But you're not going to know the reason until obviously you cross over.
Yeah.
And then you kind of get like the whole picture of, I get it now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we're coming towards the tail end of the show. I mean, I find you both very, very fascinating. Tell people where they can find you, what do you have going on next, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so we're at theeckharts.com. That's where you can find our website, and we post all of our events and the places you can connect with us. We post all of that there. We're on Instagram, at the.eckharts. We're also on TikTok, because we're like millennial Zoomers, at the.eckharts. So you can find us there as well. As far as things which are upcoming, our most current focus is our work with the School of Occult Arts, which is a joint venture between Kat, myself, and a art witch from Chicago, Isabel Rizzo. We work to teach about occult philosophy, if you want history, to get into magic, how to do magic, witchcraft, etc., folkcraft. That's our major online portal where we teach, we lecture, we host meetups. And that's probably the most active thing that we're doing right now, outside of one-on-one consultations. We are available for people to sit down and book a time with us where we try and help integrate like occult philosophy into your life and the things you want to achieve.
And we use divination.
Mm-hmm. So exactly.
That's a plus.
Exactly.
We can tell that both of yous are in sync. It's mm-hmm. like yous were always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can see, not because you said it, but because I can see it. You know, you do this field for so many years and you live it. It's like you could see that yous are connected, which is great. You know, when you said witchcraft, mm-hmm. can you just define that a little bit and how you help people and the witchcraft?
Yeah, sure.
Like if I want to put a spell on my neighbor, is that what you're referring to?
No.
I have a talk to the side about that. Not again. No, what?
He's kidding.
It's a joke.
Yeah.
About witchcraft.
Sure. So, Kat, you're an eclectic witch.
I am indeed. But I want to speak briefly about magic, because that's really where witchcraft and these various magical traditions are centered around, if it's not neo-pagan or the nature sort of religions. And magic has many uses, not just for cursing your neighbor, but also for, as you said, when we're talking to spirits, we need help with our finances. We need help with direction in our lives. And some of these magical techniques are really built around self-empowerment and finding direction. And
exactly.
I guess, yeah, really around giving yourself control over your life.
Exactly. I think we often fall back in the magical communities to talking about Crowley, for better or for ill. You may not like him, and that's fine. I don't love everything about him, usually for ill. But I think Crowley's definition of magic is probably one of the best of like the 19th century. And that is ritual action or intent to bring reality in alignment with your will. So what you want to do, what you want to achieve, who you want to be with. And there are various options and ways in which to interact with that magical praxis. You mentioned spirits. Ancestrally, it feels like spirits want the best for us, and they will pull for us on the other side to help us achieve those things. Now, they might sometimes have a different idea of what's best for you than you do, but that's why it's useful to talk with them and to say, no, I don't want that. I don't want that. I want this. So witchcraft is essentially kind of gets a little bit of a bad rap, because it feels like everything that was heterodox, everything that the church maybe was against, they said, well, this is witchcraft. And the perfect example is Appalachian folkcraft. There's a book on my shelf called Long Lost Friend. And it's a handbook of magic, essentially. And it's a handbook of magic for Pennsylvania Dutch folks who, in the 1800s needed help with their horses or protecting themselves or guaranteeing a good harvest. And everything inside there is spells. You go out into your field and you draw three big J's in the ground, three big J's for Jesus. And then you say this canticle spell out to the sky. And hopefully that means Jesus will bless your field and you will have great yield. Now, if you don't put those three J's, but you do exactly the same thing, then you're doing witchcraft. And it's just that the dominant groups were kind of like, oh, you know, the devil, we don't
want to use the label. I get what you're saying. I definitely get it. Yeah. You're right. A cult.
Yeah, we agree. They
put it in simple terms and give it a label, and all of a sudden you're this evil person walking the street. Yeah. When
it's such a lie.
This has been an awesome show, guys. We are at the end.
Thank you so much.
Fascinating. Great meeting both of you. And Julie, wrap it up.
All right. Well, we want to thank Carnation for sponsoring the show. We love them. Thank you so much. And join us next Monday night on the United Public Radio Network on 105.3 FM from New Orleans. And stay tuned for the Angel Rock.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great, safe night.
Have a great night, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.